tendencies. The Republicans and Democrats calling for solving their problems with another war. Clinton and Trump and little girls. Time for projectiles to be hurled somewhere. Pick a spot to raise, then receive the press's praise. As we watch the Epstein Empire rain down fire, when there's nothing left to decimate, how will the empire satiate its need for complete control? No factor for the human toll. The asphyxiation of whole populations, leaving ruins in place of a nation. See you in the detention center, along with your neighbors. As we watch the Epstein Empire rain down fire. As we watch the Epstein Empire rain down fire. As we watch the Epstein Empire rain down fire.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, the United States announced a closer to home front for its project of global domination over the weekend. President Trump gathered a faker's dozen of Latin American heads of state at his golf course near Miami to present Shield of the Americas, a program promising more misery than a hurricane to come for the region's poor. Karen Spring is coordinator for Honduras Solidarity Network, the, quote, decentralized network of approximately 30 organizations from across Canada and the United States committed to demonstrating and advocating for solidarity with the Honduran social movement. She has too authored numerous articles and reports regarding human rights issues, on which topic she's testified before Canada's Parliament, and her work can be found at her website, aquiabajo.com. Karen's just back from Honduras, where the sad anniversary of murdered human rights and environment defender Berta Cáceres was marked. Welcome back to the program, Karen.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for having me again.
Well, it's great to speak with you, of course. Now, Karen, can you remind us, please, who Berta was and the circumstances around her sad demise?
Sure. So Berta Cáceres is or was an indigenous environmentalist land defender. She was a very, very well-known activist in Honduras, but she traveled all over the world to meet with different social movements. And to show her solidarity, she frequently traveled to many Latin American countries and was a big supporter of Cuba and Cuba's project, as well as other progressive projects around Latin America. In 2016, she was murdered in her home when a small hit squad broke down or kicked down the back door of her home and killed her. And the whole circumstances around her murder had a lot to do with who she was and how powerful her leadership was in the social movement, both in Honduras and regionally in Latin America. And it also had a lot to do with the fact that she was an indigenous leader that was supporting communities in Western Honduras to oppose an internationally funded hydroelectric dam. And so she was constantly coming up against the powers that be, both in Honduras, but also that are, you know, obviously stretch all across Latin America. And she was very fierce anti-imperialist, but she was a very special leader. Also, something that people tend to refer to her when they speak about her is that she actually won the Goldman Environmental Prize, which has been called sort of the Environmental Nobel Prize, the year before she was murdered, so in 2015. And so it was just her 10-year anniversary of her assassination this past or a couple weeks ago. And people in Honduras don't actually call it a commemoration of her assassination. They call it a commemoration of her siembra in Spanish, which basically means her sowing or her planting. They consider sort of her that she was a seed and that she was planted when she was assassinated. And it's very much in line with the Lenca indigenous people spirituality and the vision that they have of her as being someone that was so incredibly influential in Honduras as well as in Latin America and the world.
Well, and reminiscent of the resistance motto, they thought they were burying us, but they didn't realize we were seeds.
Exactly. That's the whole sort of concept of it. It's actually her daughter on the eve or shortly after her murder that said, "You can't murder my mom." She is part of a movement. She is a seed, and her ideas will continue to grow and expand and basically transcend borders. And that is certainly the case with her, with Berta's memory, her legend. And so that was there was a gathering to celebrate that in Western Honduras on March 1st and March 2nd.
Yeah, tell me about that. COPIHN, the organization that you can tell us what that means. They, quote, organized a series of spiritual, political, and cultural events. And these three things, like the three sisters, in a sense.
So yes, you're right. It was organized by the organization that Berta co-founded in the late 1900s, 1990s, not 1900s. It's called the Civic Council of Popular and Indigenous Organizations of Honduras, or COPIHN by its Spanish acronym. And they invited people and movements and organizations from across Honduras and from many parts of the world to converge on Berta's hometown, which is also where COPIHN is based, in the town of La Esperanza in western Honduras. And so people came from all over. It was quite an amazing gathering. And it was basically several days of activities. There was the main activity or the main day, which was on Sunday, March 1st, in La Esperanza, in COPIHN's training center, which is this wonderful sort of self-sustaining area that COPIHN has built and can house many people that joined the activities, but also come in from different parts of the world throughout the year to sort of get involved in COPIHN and COPIHN's activities. And so they started these ceremonies with a spiritual ceremony that was led by a Maya indigenous woman and many of Berta's close friends and her family members, inviting everybody to sort of light a candle, but also to commemorate her and what Berta stood for, which was just so much beyond what she herself stood for, because she was so deeply rooted in indigenous spirituality, in indigenous cosmovisions or way of seeing the world, but also in the way of defending Lenca indigenous land, and basically very committed to anti-capitalist, anti-patriarchy, anti-racist activities and social movements around the country. And so it was a lovely gathering. One of the individuals that was there, kind of sort of as a distinguished guest, was the Mexican activist Gustavo Castro, who happened to suffer an assassination attempt at the same time that Berta was murdered. So when the hit squad broke down the back door of her home, kicked it in, and shot her in her pajamas in her bedroom in her house in La Esperanza, Gustavo Castro was in the guest room, and he had come to Honduras to participate in some of COPIHN's activities. And the hitman shot at him, and he managed to survive the assassination attempt. And so he was also in attendance, which was very important for the Honduran social movement, but also for Berta's family and for COPIHN, because of his sort of longstanding support and also his own voice that he's used to sort of also call for justice for Berta's murder, but also for the attempted assassination against his life when Berta was murdered.
Renata Adriana of the Landless Workers Movement in Brazil, she commented that Berta was, quote, a guardian of the waters, a guardian of the forests, of nature, and of everything that humanity should identify as the basis of life. And this, going along with the spiritual aspect of this, as being beyond that, there's a larger scope to just the political in her life and in her struggles.
Absolutely. And I think going back to, the interests that were behind her assassination and that to many degrees have not been held accountable, the very powerful Atala family, who is an oligarch family, as Hondurans call the 10 families that, sort of control the economic and political scene in Honduras or context in Honduras. Berta, at the time she was murdered, was opposing the construction of a hydroelectric dam on indigenous territories. And the construction of the dam would have had very significant impacts on the indigenous population, which were also struggling for recognition of their collective land titles. And so Bertha was seen as a guardian of the rivers, but also she was very much committed to ensuring that indigenous community had control over their territories and had a say in how their territories were going to be developed. And many times there were so many different projects, extractive projects that were proposed for many communities in Western Honduras, where Copin has a presence and where the majority of the Lenca indigenous population is lives in Honduras. And so Copin, along with Bertha and the Lenca communities, would defend their lands from mining, large-scale mining projects, large-scale energy projects, large-scale logging projects, as well as the construction of hydroelectric dams. And very much a part of that defense was about also recovering Lenca indigenous spirituality, because obviously across the Americas, just like many indigenous populations, Honduras and the Lenca people and the indigenous populations of Honduras suffered really extreme amounts of violence through the through colonization. And so recovering indigenous identity and spirituality became a very big mission of Copin and Bertha's, as an integral part of defending rivers and their lands and their territories from these global interests in the name of so-called development that would have very significant and dramatic impacts on the indigenous populations, which they felt were not very beneficial at all to the local populations where the projects were proposed. And that was certainly the case with the dam project, the Agua Zarca dam project that was proposed for the Gualcarque River, that Berta was so, strongly opposed to, and that ultimately led to her assassination. That was the same sort of, that was just one example of all the different foreign interests and national interests that Berta was opposing, along with Copin and indigenous communities in Western Honduras.
Yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that in a second. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Karen Spring. Karen is coordinator for Honduras Solidarity Network, the quote, decentralized network of approximately 30 organizations from across Canada and the U.S. committed to demonstrating and advocating for solidarity with the Honduran social movement. We're talking in and around Karen's recent trip to Honduras to mark, what was the term you said, rather than the death of Berta, it was to mark
It was
her.
in Spanish, it's called siembra, which sort of
Remember.
translates into sowing or planting, I guess.
Well, now you mentioned the Atala Zabla family. Tell me who these people are, and what role they played and continue to play in this the milieu of development, so-called, in Honduras.
Sure. So the Atala Zabla family is one of the most powerful elite families in Honduras and arguably regionally in Central America as well. And so, in the 10 years since Berta's murder, Copin, Berta's organization, and Berta's family have been fighting for justice for her murder. There have been eight individuals that have been arrested and found guilty of involvement in her murder. Most of them are the actual hitmen, or what they say, material authors, the individuals that pulled the trigger, that broke into her home that night and killed her. But Copin and the Berta's family are continuing to seek justice and have named and are constantly pushing at the Honduran state, as well as the international community, particularly international solidarity, to continue calling and to bring to justice the Atala Zabla family, which was the wealthy family that was behind financing the dam and also seeking the international funding that also contributed to funding the hit squad and the violence around the construction of the Agua Zarca dam. And so the Atala Zabla family are very powerful. They are extremely wealthy. They are basically involved in the banking sector in Honduras, and that's, I think, probably their largest probably income, or where a lot of their power comes from, because they're so connected into some of the major banks in Honduras that are also regional banks in Central America that are connected into the global banking system. And so the Atala Zabla family, as well as the other, 9 to 11 wealthy families in Honduras, are also the major allies of the US government. And have been for several decades. And so they also get a lot of their power from these long-standing relationships and economic sort of interests that they share very closely with the US government. And so Copin and Berta's family continues to call on the Honduran state to hold the Atala Sabla family accountable. They call them the intellectual authors or the masterminds of Berta's murder because they knew about the plot to kill her. They were involved in the conversations and the planning around her murder and also economically benefited from her murder. And so that is sort of one of the ongoing calls. And 10 years later, Copin and Berta's family continue stronger than ever and determined to bring the Atala Zabla family to justice for Berta's assassination.
At the Celebration of Life, Bishop Henry Ruiz, and I'm getting this from American Magazine, he spoke to the people gathered there, and he said, quote, "It seems that there are powerful groups who are preventing justice in Berta's case from prevailing. This puts human rights defenders in even greater danger." Today, he is the bishop is saying, and he should know. He worked closely with Juan Lopez. Who was Juan Lopez?
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to talk about, mentioning Juan Lopez. Juan Lopez was an environmental land defender as well, a water defender who was resisting the expansion and the operation of a mining project inside a natural, or sorry, a protected area in northern Honduras. And he was also violently murdered in September of 2024. He's another example of what happens to land and environmental defenders in Honduras. The reason why he's often mentioned is because he's probably the most well-known land environmental defender that has been killed in Honduras since Berta. And so a lot of people talk about the fact that allowing the Atala Zabla family, who owned the dam company that Berta was opposing, allowing them to walk away and not holding them accountable for their involvement in Berta's murder means that crimes against other environmentalists and land defenders will also remain in impunity. And Juan Lopez's case, he was assassinated as he was leaving church. His family was in the vehicle as an armed individuals approached his car and shot him through the window of his vehicle. And they still have the perpetrators of his murder have still not been held accountable, and much less the mining company that many believe are sort of again the intellectual authors, as they say in Spanish, or the masterminds behind his murder as well. And so it's very important in these very emblematic cases that justice is sought and achieved, because it signals that, anyone that's thinking about murdering environmentalists and land defenders will face justice. And in the case of Berta and Juan Lopez, we have not seen that. And so that sets a very dangerous pattern and precedent. And that's what the bishop was referring to, as well as what Berta's family continues to refer to, the importance of justice, the importance of international solidarity, calling for justice, and also commemorating these individuals who are just examples of what other environmentalists and land defenders in Honduras, but in Latin America more broadly as a region, face as a result of opposing these powerful interests.
And that they know that it won't be just the people who pull the triggers, but that the people that have to face justice run all the way vertically along the chain of command. In the case, and they would like it. The people that the authors of these crimes would like it that people think, oh, these are maybe workers that fear for losing their jobs, and so they went on the spur of the moment, maybe had a few drinks, and then decided, yeah, we'll go get rid of this problem. But in this case with Berta, it was David Castillo was the first up the chain to face justice, and it seemed emblematic to me that he's a guy that was trained. He's called a U.S.-trained military intelligence officer turned DESA president. This is the company that was running the hydroelectric dam, but by U.S. trained, that sounds to me like School of the Americas. And now we're moving along the chain to the real authors of this violence.
Exactly. And the eight individuals that are imprisoned for Berta's murder, three of them, or sorry, four of them, so half of them received military training of some sort, likely from US forces, or were funded by the US or trained by the US as Honduran military officials. And as you mentioned, the president of DESA, Desarrollos Energéticos, the dam company, that David Castillo, he was also arrested and found guilty of being involved in plotting her murder, Berta's murder. And he worked alongside the Atala Zabla family. They together were sort of managed the company and the many companies that were sort of economically benefiting from the construction of that dam. And I just want to raise something really important because you made a really good point when you're like going up the chain of command. So Copin and Berta's family started, they fought to get the material authors or the hitmen found guilty. Then they went up the chain and kept demanding that the head of security for the dam company, the president of the dam company, was also arrested and found guilty. But Copin is also asking for international justice, and they've actually filed complaints, criminal and civil complaints, against the international financial institutions, such as the FMO in Holland, for funding the Atala Zabla family and DESSA, the dam company. And they're asking the international banks, that particular bank that funded and ignored all of the violence that was going on around the construction of that dam, they want to hold that financial institution accountable, in a foreign jurisdiction. And so that's also very important that international investors know that when you invest in violence and you invest in projects that are creating violence for local communities, you should also be held accountable and you hold responsibility as a result of providing the funding for that project. And so that is the next step in the chain of command. And it's been 10 years, and Copin will continue until they get some sort of resolution from those complaints that they filed in against the FMO.
And the FMO is the Dutch Entrepreneurial Development Bank. And didn't they pull out like a year after the assassination of Berta? Didn't they end their involvement with DESSA?
They did, but Berta, when she was still alive, asked them many times to pull out of the project, to stop funding the project. They ignored her. They refused to admit or confront the fact that the dam was not wanted by the local population and that there was very significant violence surrounding the construction of the project. And so that's also one of the reasons that Copin and Berta's family has gone to confront the bank in their own jurisdiction to say, you knew and you ignored it and you kept funding the project. And then the actual money that came, that actually left the bank accounts of that international financial institution, were tracked to actually funding the hit squad that broke into her home and killed her. So they've actually traced the checks and the money going through the different bank accounts to say the money landed in the bank account a couple of days or the day before her murder, and then money was transferred to the hit squad to kill her. And so it was directly this international bank that helped directly fund her assassination. And so that is a very significant point. I don't think that's ever been traced in such detail in any sort of case in Latin America. And so Copin really believes that the bank has very significant responsibility in her assassination.
Well, and another branch of this, in 2009, there was a coup. Manuel Zelaya was dragged out the president in his underwear in Honduras right away. I mean, faster than anybody, faster than something that's very fast. Stephen Harper, our then prime minister, Canadian prime minister, gave credence to this, the new government, and struck up subsequently free trade deals and everything else. What about Canadian involvement in maybe not this event directly, but in that chain of events that allowed these right-wing elements to take over the democratically elected government and put in the policies that did lead to this sad killing?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's really important, especially now in the current context in Latin America. Honduras was the US supported a coup in 2009, and that sort of ushered in 12 years of what Hondurans refer to as the narco dictatorship. So it was first, it was basically the National Party, which is now back in power in Honduras, and I'll explain that in a second. But the coup basically ushered in like this these policies that opened Honduras up for foreign investment. And so the investments in the construction of hydroelectric dams was sort of incentivized to attract these companies and to attract this foreign investment in Honduras. But then Honduras slowly turned into a narco state because the president that was in power for 8 years following the coup, Juan Orlando Hernandez, the day that he left office, he was requested by the U.S. Department of Justice for extradition to the United States to face trial for narcotics trafficking and arms-related conspiracy in the New York Southern District Court. And so Juan Orlando Hernandez was extradited. He faced trial. He was sentenced and convicted by a U.S. judge and by a U.S. jury. And then he was sentenced to 45 years in prison. And the whole arguments around his case was that he was using the president's office to basically guarantee impunity for drug traffickers that were funding his elections and were funding his. He basically controlled the drug cartels that were running all drugs through Honduras up into the U.S. market. And so recently, actually, in November of last year, Trump decided to intervene in the Honduran elections, very blatantly backing the National Party once again, which was also Juan Orlando Hernandez's party. He also pardoned Juan Orlando Hernandez. And so the day after the general elections in Honduras, a convicted drug trafficker was escorted from a U.S. jail on orders by Donald Trump to a very fancy hotel. And he was completely pardoned of his involvement in drug trafficking, or at least the conviction and the 45 years he was supposed to serve in prison. And so now the U.S. administration, Donald Trump, has now propped up through intervening in the Honduran elections in November of last year. He has now put back in a right-wing government in Honduras, the same government, the same party that basically turned Honduras into a narco state. And that is a party that is very deeply entrenched in drug trafficking and very significant corruption allegations against multiple people in the government. And now this government in Honduras is the one that Trump is inviting to his Shield of the Americas in order to allegedly combat transnational drug cartels in Latin America, which is, it's not unusual for the U.S. to take extremely hypocritical positions. And this is just another example of that hypocrisy.
Yes, the Shield of the Americas. I'm sure we're going to be hearing about that for years to come. We're fast out of time, Karen, and I'm running out of voice too, it seems. Finally, there is a documentary film, Water for Life. It was screened at the end of events that you were just at. Did you manage to go to the film, or did you get to the Capitol?
I didn't actually. I wasn't able to go, but I have followed very closely the production of that film. And so it traces different Latin American activists that are land defenders and water defenders. And so I recommend it to everybody. You'll learn more about Berta Cáceres and other Latin American defenders and just sort of all the difficulties that they face as a result of the work that they do to protect the environment.
Well, I'll put a link to that in the show notes there. Karen Spring, thanks a lot for coming on again. And I do look forward to our next conversation. Thanks to John Helmer. That's all I've got for this week. Until the next time, thanks a lot, Karen.
Great. Thanks so much, Chris.
Whose campaigns were so largely fed by massive corporations with certain expectations that there's a quid pro quo involved in these elections. Though the leaders all deny it, how could they not? It would smash all the credibility they think they've got. And of course they will all say it is an accident of birth that the US is the biggest oil exporter on earth. And if wars were engineered from the belly of the beast, then there'd be one in Russia and one in the Middle East. Other things presumably affect their thinking. Which country should be bombed? Which ship should we be sinking? Which is more profitable, stability? Or half the world burning in World War III? With pipelines bombed and refueled. of great gain.